From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with a series of signs. Naples is holding y'all in our hearts, one said. The spirit of Hollerhorn will run again. Naples is behind you, said another. As reported by the Democrat and Chronicle in May, the signs were placed after a fire destroyed part of Hollerhorn Distilling in Naples. Crews from more than 10 nearby fire districts rushed to the scene, but investigators deemed the building a total loss. Now, the distilling side of the business was saved due to a firewall that was built, but there is a lot of work to be done before the team can reopen Hollerhorn. They hope to do that next spring. Despite the hardship, the owners of Hollerhorn say they have been overwhelmed by an outpouring of support from the community. Volunteers have offered their services and support, financial contributions, and also just a lot of time and sweat equity, Megan Mack, that's the term. The effort is one we've decided to highlight as part of our series of conversations about people and organizations that are making positive change in the community. And this is essentially the August edition. It's going to be a fast-moving hour. You're going to hear a lot of stories this hour. And we want to start by highlighting what's happening in Naples at Hollerhorn. Carl Neubauer is the owner and head distiller there, and he's taken time out from the schedule to join us to tell the story. Hi, Carl. Thanks for making time for the program.
Hey, Evan. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I mean, I'd start by asking how you doing. I'm so sorry to hear what happened in May. How are you holding up?
We're actually holding up pretty well at this point. I think it took a few weeks for us to get over the shock and sadness of what we lost, but very quickly, I think with all the community support and outpouring, you know, we just felt tremendous love and support. So we just basically grabbed the tool belts, dusted them off, and decided we're rebuilding. And especially with all the support of the community, you know, this is a community, obviously, with a lot of live events and art and music here. So we're excited to do it. And we're trying to find all the silver linings we can, and including, you know, rethinking based on customer feedback, our staff, even, you know, Melissa and I, what we'd change if we could, because here's the opportunity. So,
yeah, boy,
you know, yeah. So it's a positive in that regard. We're doing well. We've got a great network of people that are working with us and helping us, and family has been incredible. So what do we have to complain about? You know, we feel very fortunate.
Well, take us back before we get to what happened in May. For those who haven't been down to Hollerhorn, what you are, how big you are, what the mission is there.
So we're a family business. Melissa owned the business, and we are two daughters, and we wanted to create. So going back a little further than the start of Hollerhorn, we had started in Naples, a small kind of farm-to-table restaurant here, and started a little music and built a community space looking to create living wage jobs and support a lot of our friends who are farmers in the area and farming small in sustainable ways. As people that, you know, love to cook, and Melissa's sister Michelle is a very talented CIA chef. She and had always dreamed of doing that. We started there about 15 years ago, and in kind of rethinking that business, selling it to Mandy and her husband Chris, Mandy Gordon. They worked at Roots as well. They're doing a tremendous job. Currently, they own and operate that now. I wanted to start a craft cocktail program there. But I also have been distilling for over 18 years. So in rethinking and redreaming what we're doing as artists and business, we thought, let's combine everything, you know, create a proper music venue, create a farm distillery that, again, would support all of our friends and farmers in the region, kind of create a local food hub and program and do what I've been basically going back to school for the last 18 years, studying in between my full-time job, traveling around the world and, you know, domestically in the States to study that and, you know, create really high quality spirits made with 100% New York State grown grain, fruit, et cetera. So in a nutshell, we created a nice little quaint community event space. We tried to, you know, support a diverse range of talent and really reach out to friends, our musicians, artists, and try bring, you know, a high level of talent regionally and nationally in to a small town, a community that supports it. Naples has always been a really artistic broad artistic community, and they support all of that. And I think people are hungry for that. So we're excited to provide that and keep, in the last 4 years, keep expanding it, outdoor space, build an outdoor stage and venue, more and more opportunities for living wage jobs. We have a tremendous staff that we're retaining through all of this too, and very talented chefs and folks. So in a nutshell, that's what we've been doing, and that's what we'll continue to do. We're just fortunate. We hope to come back ready in the spring, by retaining all the staff and hopefully doing more training and having time there with the new space and new design. I think it'll be even better when we come back.
The fire in May, do you know what caused it?
The investigators have ruled, I think officially unknown, but leaning toward an appliance that shorted out, which is kind of a freak thing. It started in the first floor underneath the room. There's a series of freezers and refrigerators there that they've pinpointed that's where the fire began. But it is still under investigation. They haven't ruled conclusively. We were able to sift through the ashes with investigators and find our DVR and hard drive, so that's being looked at. And I think officially they've unknown cause, but they're leaning heavily toward the appliance failure, the short. That's kind of what their ruling is, I think, at this point.
Well, Carl, listeners might be surprised to hear us leading off the hour with the story of a fire in a good news hour. I mean, there's nothing good about that, but I want to give you a little bit of space to tell us what it has been like, knowing that you had such a tremendous loss. We mentioned the firewall that saved part of your business, but you are a long way away from being able to open and do what you want to do again. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's also, there's all kinds of need, and you have a community that loves you for what you've done, for what you've brought to Naples and the region, for your vision that is, I think, really community focused and artistically based with the products that you're making and some of what you're trying to bring in terms of the events. What has it been like? Give us a little bit of that part that is very, very positive and beautiful.
Oh, it's quite literally from the moment that we arrived here, Melissa and I came as the building was burning, to kind of go through, and that was early morning hours. The fire started somewhere in the 1 a.m. area. Literally before the sun was up, Melissa's sisters, Michelle and Meredith, had started a GoFundMe, and, we had no idea of a lot of what was going on. Obviously, as we were kind of scrambling, we had to build, a shear wall to kind of support, like you said, the distillery end of things had to be shored up a little bit just to save anything that was in there. And as the sun was coming up, like I said, already a GoFundMe, and it had just exploded, choked up. But, my good friend Roy Wells at Smidgen's making keychains for free, my friend Chris Abraham printing shirts for us. We've got people like all throughout the industry. My good friend Jason Barrett at Black Button, he and Jeff Fairbrother and their family reached out, and they've not only supported financially but allowed me to continue making product. We're making another round of gin at Black Button, and throughout the industry, Kings County Distillery in Brooklyn, and people locally like Flower City Station doing fundraisers who I don't, I'll be honest, I know of their business. I've been there, but I don't know them, super close. And so through it all, I think Melissa and I just have met some of the best people around, and they, I would hope that we would do the same and reciprocate, if we had the same opportunity. And we certainly try in our day-to-day business to support people and donate and give time we started a scholarship program too here. So we do, we do what we can, but it's just been overwhelming. Local businesses, even people in our field who you would think might be competitive, are just, dropping everything to help pick up and do what they can to help support our business while we're struggling here. So it's been honestly like the most positive experience we've had. And you mentioned the signs. The morning after the fire, Linda Starkweather, another good friend who's an artist, she was here. I was here at about 6 a.m. and you know, I was waiting for an excavator to arrive because the building started fire three more times after they put it out. So we had to actually get debris and remove it from the site. Otherwise, we were worried we were going to lose what was left. And at 6 a.m., Linda Starkweather's out there, you know, putting signs up. Sorry, I'm getting choked up.
It's all right, man. I mean, listen, Carl, if you ever want to know just what the community thinks of you when you go through this crisis and people you know well and people you're surprised you don't know all that well stepping forward, it says a lot about what you've created and what they think of you. And what I'd like to do, Carl, is I would hope that you can stay in touch with us, and I'd like to make sure that when you are ready, whether it's next May or whenever, to really reopen, come back and tell us the full story here, and we'll sit down for an hour and we'll toast your work. But in the meantime, where can people find more of what where your products are and maybe what you want them to know?
Yeah, so we're right now, most of our product, I think that was available and out in the market is sold, and we're having a hard time finding glass, but Waterloo Container, family-owned business too, they're scrambling to get us glass. We love things, so no labels or any closures or anything. So at this point, we're not out there in the marketplace, but we're working on a satellite tasting room in Naples, and love to, if your listeners want to go on our website, or we're on Instagram, obviously, and Facebook, but keep in touch that way. Just as soon as we know our open date, when we can get product out there or open our satellite tasting room, it'd be fantastic to see everybody. And we've got some fun offerings barrels that were earmarked for harvest. So we're just, waiting patiently here to get all the pieces together to bottle again, which should happen, hopefully in the next few months. I'd love to come back and share it. If everybody wants to check out the website, is probably the best way, and that's just www.hollerhorn.com. And feel free to, we don't speak with email. If you want to sign up for the newsletter or whatever, that's great, and we'll keep in touch.
Hollerhorn.com. It's Hollerhorn Distilling in Naples, dealing with the devastating fire from May, but a whole community working to bring them back online and get them back up and going. And it's going to be a team effort. Carl, much love to you and the whole team, and let's talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Evan. Talk to you soon.
What a story, and what a person. The people in Naples are so lucky, I think, to have that, and that will be a success story. This is an hour of conversations about positive things happening and people working to uplift others. And our next guest is Lauren Coe, founder and executive director of One Soldier at a Time, who's with us now. Hi, Lauren. Welcome. How are you?
I am doing fabulous. How are you?
Good. Tell us what One Soldier at a Time is, Lauren.
Well, we are an organization, a non-for-profit, 100% non-for-profit. No one makes a penny, not even me. And we really, our heart is to support primarily our veterans, but we also support about 300 local military moms and wives at Christmas, Valentine's Day, and Mother's Day by giving them gifts of encouragement. So while their loved ones serving overseas, they get a gift from us, just helping them stay connected to their loved one. And then we also send sun care packages overseas every year. And then obviously our big push is with our veterans that are homeless, impoverished, living in PTSD homes or VA hospitals, just trying to make a difference with hygiene packages of hope.
Started in 2006. What was the origin here, Lauren?
Well, we started mostly because a dear friend of mine lost her son in Iraq shortly after the war had started. 2 weeks before he was slated to come home, he did, but not the way she had hoped, and it was heartbreaking. And she started a project called the Molly Fund, for his five-year-old daughter, an education fund. And I gave 10% of my income to the project to help it out. And I'm like, man, wish I could do more, but I did what I could. And then another friend, her son went into the Marines as well, came home safe and sound. But she started a project called Full Circle Home. I'm like, wow, more people need to do that. And I feel like the Holy Spirit said, yeah, why not you? So here we go. It's been many years since, and my son's been in the military, and he's out. And yeah, it's kind of how we get started.
Would you believe 16 years later that you're supporting over 2,300 local veterans, looking to support, 2,600 this year? That's quite a lot of work in 16 years, Lauren.
It was as much a shock to me as it is to anyone else. I really... I just put feet to faith and said, okay, this is what we're going to do. There's a huge need, and we're only scratching the surface. That's what so many people don't realize. I mean, we're looking to sponsor 2,600 veterans this year with hygiene packages of hope, and there's still thousands more. I mean, people don't realize the huge need there is for our veterans in our community.
So before I let you go again, 4th Annual Heroes and Hidden Heroes event Saturday. Tell us about it.
We are looking, it's free to all active duty and veterans. It's going to be at Webster Fireman's Field this Sunday from 2 to 8 p.m. We have a fabulous meal put on by Palermo's, and then we have three bands that are going to be there. I'm just so excited. I mean, we have Mason Tyler Band, 47 South, Ice Cream Social. I mean, just some great entertainment, raffles, 50-50, a wonderful time for the whole family just to honor our veterans and to raise as much awareness and finances as we can. We're going to lock the doors. No one can leave until we raised at least $24,000. So, you know, get strapped in.
It is at the Webster Fireman's Field. And I'm sorry, Saturday or Sunday? Which day?
Sunday,
2 to 8.
Sunday.
At the Webster Fireman's Field on Ridge Road in the village of Webster. Lauren, anywhere you want to send anybody online to learn more about what you're doing?
Absolutely. They can go to onesoldieratatime.net. If they are a veteran or active duty, just send me a message. Let me know their name, their phone number, and also what military service they were in. I'll have a ticket for them. Otherwise, if they're not, they can get their tickets there. They can go to the coach in Webster, right in the village, and they have tickets available. They can contact me directly, and I have no problem giving out my phone number. Is that okay?
Go for it.
585-764-4550, and I will hook you up with tickets because sometimes the site works and sometimes it has to be refreshed. So I don't want anyone left behind. There's just such a huge need. And our, you know, with the, they talk about 22 suicides a day, and they don't understand that it's a much higher number than that. And our veterans really need to know how valuable they are, as much here stateside as they were serving overseas. So that's why we're having this project, to recognize, honor, and encourage.
Lauren, thank you for the work you're doing, and thank you for joining the program today.
Thank you so much for having us, Evan.
That's Lauren Coe, the founder and executive director of One Soldier at a Time, and talking to her just days after the U.S. Congress finally passed the PACT Act and some of the support for veterans that, well, as a number of people have been saying in Washington lately, if you can send someone to war, you're going to have to care for them when they're home. You can't just care about sending them to a battlefield. And Lauren Coe and so many others have been doing a lot of that work sort of ad hoc, person by person, for years. Our next guest on this Monday afternoon, as we talk about people trying to lift up our various communities, Joseph Staff is executive director of Literacy Rochester. Joshua Staff, executive director of Literacy Rochester. Joshua, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us, Evan.
The website is literacyrochester.org to learn more, but I'm going to give you the floor to tell everyone what it is that you guys do.
Yeah, so Literacy Rochester, for the last 58 years, have been helping adults in our community to improve their reading, math, English language, and digital literacy skills. And that might be so that they can get into a high school diploma program, vocational training. They might just want to be able to read a story to their grandkids at night, or they're applying for a job online and don't understand the portals that the application has to go through.
What is the greatest need that you're trying to serve right now, Joshua?
The biggest need right now is a replacement for some of the adult education programs that have actually shut down because of COVID. One example is that the BOCES 1 on the east side of the city, they have closed their adult education program. And so finding ways to serve the students that were in their programming is a huge hurdle. And so, you know, a lot of them were going to that BOCES because of transportation issues. So coming up with classes and tutors in that area is something that we're working on right now. And then the other issue that we deal greatly with is the digital divide and digital inclusion. So helping people gain access to broadband computers and knowing how to use it. And that's really a very important thing, because you hear people talking about, you know, the digital divide and digital inclusion, and they are constantly talking about getting people internet and getting people computers. But what's lacking is talking about getting people the skills on how to use those two things.
Yeah. If people want to become a tutor or to get involved, what's the easiest way to do that?
Going right online to literacyrochester.org, and we have a tab that's titled Volunteers, and they can either become a tutor, which is to help with the reading, math, or English language, or become a digital literacy volunteer, which helps people bridge the digital divide.
About 60 seconds. Is there, without naming any names, but is there the kind of stories that stand out to you that you wish everyone could understand about the impact of the work that you're doing?
Yeah, so I have two different stories. One is related, a gentleman came out of being incarcerated for 8 years, didn't have a high school diploma, was living in a group home, didn't know where he was going, worked with us for 3 years, improved his skills, went through the technical sterilization program through REOC, got an internship with a local hospital, and we just found out this summer that he has now moved into his own place and that he got a job offer from Strong Memorial Hospital.
That's great. Great. So, and you said, was there another one you want to share real quick?
Yes. So we have a gentleman who's 65 years old. He retired from being a New York State certified electrician, came to us because he had a reading level of a third grader, and he wanted to learn how to read so that he could read bedtime stories to his grandkids.
Oh, man.
So, you know, our goal here is to meet people where they are, when they can meet, and to accomplish the goals that they're looking to accomplish, whether that is getting into a training program, applying for a job, or learning how to read so you can read to your grandkids at night.
Joshua Staff is Executive Director of Literacy Rochester. If you want to help learn more about what they offer, it's all there at literacyrochester.org. Joshua, those stories are so great, and I know they are just the tip of the iceberg. Thanks for what you're doing in this community. I hope you get a lot of people who want to step up and work with you, and here's to continued success.
Thank you, Evan. You have a great day.
What a story. More connections in just a moment with more stories just like that one. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, best-selling author Nancy French joins me. She's been writing about and thinking about showing grace to people who disagree with us, to people who can be really rough with us, to people who can call us out or consider us to be political enemies. In this polarized time, finding more grace with Nancy French Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Once a month, for most of the past year, we've been having these programs where we move fast, we tell a lot of short stories, and they're the kinds of stories that are undercovered or underappreciated in our community. People doing the kind of work, organizations that are grassroots, volunteer efforts, and more. And our next guest is Marisol, and Marisol, I'm going to do my best here. I think it's Ubinas, who is Director of Aging Services at the Community Place of Greater Rochester. Welcome, Marisol. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me today.
And tell us what it is that you do there.
Oh, wonderful. So I am the Director of Aging and in Aging Services here at the Community Place. We have the Foster Grandparent Program. That's one of the programs that we have where folks 55 and older can come in and volunteer and work in the schools with two kids that are paired in the classroom. So each volunteer will be paired with two children, help them with things like reading, social skills, and math. And we also have what's called the Senior Companion Program. And that's sort of the same thing, but our volunteers go to places like senior centers, nursing homes, and community homes to spend some time with folks that are alone, that just need companionship. Maybe they need help with shopping or picking up prescriptions. We do also have case management here where we help with recertifications, housing applications, and several things like that.
I want to talk a little bit more about the foster grandparent program, because I know there are some community members who may be interested. This is for older adults age 55 and up. And I know that part of the goal here is for students and teachers to benefit by working one-on-one and the kind of up-close emotional support, the social support. Tell us more about what that entails and what people ought to know if they're interested.
Absolutely. So if you're interested and you're 55 or older, you can contact me here at the community place. And the first step would be we would send out a job application. Once we get it back, we can send out for, we have them doing fingerprinting, background checks, and screenings. So we make sure that all that good stuff is done before a volunteer is placed in any school with our kids. So that's the first step would be to reach out to one of us here at the community place, and they'll take their trainings. And what we try to do is put them in the school closest to their homes. If that's impossible, we try to get the transportation for them to get to and from the schools so that they can go. And this doesn't only help the students and the teachers. This also helps our seniors to get out into the community. They also get paid a stipend, so it doesn't affect their benefits.
And on the companion program, so again, the foster grandparent program is for adults who are going to be working with children. The senior companion program is for people age 55 and up working with, as you describe it, frail elders at the adult day programs. Again, what kind of time requirement are we talking about here?
A volunteer can volunteer as low as 5 hours to 40 hours a week, as long as, you know, they're willing to do it, they want to do it, they're healthy, and they want to get out there. That's the only real requirement.
How many people are you working with?
Background check.
How many people are you working with right now on this?
Each program has about 60 volunteers, 55 and older, and we are recruiting. We are looking for new volunteers for the new school year that's starting, and we do have a lot more clients that are looking for the senior companion services that we offer.
Marisol, before we go, I just want to relate a story that comes to mind for me, and I'm curious to know if this is kind of right in the sweet spot of what you're looking for. I was talking to someone who described their children are now grown and out of the house, that they're winding down their own work career, and essentially said, you know, it was a tough conversation, but it was with someone in my family who said, you know, looking for a reason to feel, you know, important, wanted, helpful. And all of those things that used to fill up this person's daily schedule have changed. And I wonder if that's kind of like, well, hey, that's right in the sweet spot here.
Absolutely. We have many, many people that have retired and just need something to do. So not only do they come to the senior centers, they're also helping other older adults be able to come to the senior centers also.
Marisol, how do they find you?
I am at 145 Parcells Avenue, or I can be reached at 585-288-0021, and I'm at extension 228, or you can email me at mubinas@communityplace.org.
Marisol is the Director of Aging Services at the Community Place, and their website is communityplace.org to learn more about these programs. It's really beautiful stuff. Marisol, thanks for doing it. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, and hope to hear from a lot of people out there. We're recruiting, so this is a good time to come and stop by or give us a call.
All right. Good luck to you, Marisol, and the whole team at the Community Place of Greater Rochester. We're telling stories in our community that are typically undercovered, or maybe the kind of stories that you're not aware of, people, organizations, volunteer efforts. And our next guest is Nancy Ollinger, who is program organizer for Monroe Milers. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Evan.
Tell us what Monroe Milers is.
The Monroe Milers is a 100% volunteer-operated, high-quality, developmentally appropriate urban youth running program. Over 8 weeks, kids train for a 5K or a one-mile race, and right now we're registering youth and recruiting volunteer coaches for our fall season, which starts on September 14th.
And what exactly is the origin and maybe the mission? How do you describe why you're doing what you're doing?
Well, we started out in 2011, and New Life Presbyterian Church, which is now closed, but it was on the corner of Monroe Avenue and Rosedale Street in the city. We suddenly had a group of kids in the neighborhood that were showing up on Sunday mornings and hanging out in the churchyard and needed something productive to do. They were great runners. They were running around the church, running around the grounds, running down the streets. So we rounded them up and we started a 5K running program with these kids. Many of these kids are from underserved families, home insecure families. And we started with 7 kids and 3 coaches that year. And this spring we had 50 kids and 30 volunteer coaches.
And the results I'm looking at your results. They're really good, Nancy.
Oh, this spring, in their 14 and under category in the Wegmans Family 5K, we took 6 out of the top 10 places in girls and boys. And one of our kids finished 3rd overall. So, yes.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. What are the impacts on kids' lives that you've seen with this, Nancy?
So many different stories. I have tons of stories. One of our original runners ended up, I think it was in 2016, he won the Rochester City Area Championship in cross country. He was sort of adopted by one of our coaches and coached through the college application process, and he just graduated from RIT this spring. We have another young man right now who's a refugee from Uganda who's a phenomenal runner, actually, more than we can handle in our program. And I'm getting him set up so he can run cross country with a school team this fall. Just so many individual stories, but also we just have kids who have run a 5K for the first time, mm-hmm. you know, and just learning how to set a goal and meet that goal. And these are kids that generally, because of a lack of income or an underserved population, don't engage in running. So we make sure that every kid gets a free pair of running shoes, and really that's all you need in order to run. So it can be a lifelong healthy practice or sport.
Nancy is the program organizer for Monroe Milers. That began more than a decade ago with 3 coaches and 7 kids, and now they're over 50 and 30. The results are pretty remarkable. They're getting kids into running, some for the first time. They're doing 5Ks or 1-mile races. Nancy, what do you want to leave listeners with as they want to, if they want to either get involved, learn more, think about kids who are eligible? What do people need to know?
Well, the volunteer coaches are the lifeblood of our program. So we are really looking for, you know, those who love to run, whether you run an 8-minute mile or a 12-minute mile, because we have kids at all levels, or you're a walk runner. If you would love to share your enthusiasm, your love for running, we would love to have you join us as a volunteer coach. And you can do that by looking us up on our Facebook page. Look for the Monroe Milers in Rochester, New York. Don't look for there's a Michigan program, so don't get confused. The Monroe Milers, Rochester, New York, or you could email me at allinbass@outlook.com. That's A-L-L-I-N-B-A-S at outlook.com. And what we really just want are those adults who would love to share their love for running with our kids.
Wonderful stuff. Congratulations on your success for more than a decade. Here's to much more with the Monroe Milers. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you, Ivan.
Nancy Allinger and the Monroe Milers. Our next guest, well, we've got a couple of conversations that we're going to bring to you next about efforts to get kids ready to be in school and helping them in various ways. Betsy Bringawat is interim CEO of Jewish Family Services, which runs the Pencils and Paper program. Betsy, thanks for making time for us. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having us on today.
Tell us what the program is, the Pencils and Paper program.
Yeah, so Pencils and Paper is a program of Jewish Family Services. And so we at Jewish Family Services have a wide range of programs that serve individuals of all ages in the community. And this particular program, Pencils and Paper, provides free school supplies to students in high poverty schools in Monroe County.
How do you find people in need and how do they find you?
Yeah, so we now serve over 70 schools in the area. So it's pre-K through 8th grade schools. And we know that students across our community don't have even the core supplies that they need to learn, things like pencils, paper, crayons, and glue. And we've heard this from teachers across the community. Teachers themselves are often paying hundreds, even thousands of dollars out of pocket to provide this for students. And so what we have at Pencils and Paper is a model that's being used across the country where we invite schools to participate, and then teachers at those participating pre-K through 8th grade schools are invited to come in and they shop for free school supplies twice a year. So when they walk into our store, it looks like a school supply store, except there's no cash register. They walk the aisles and they fill their carts. We have things like core supplies, art supplies, science supplies. We even have hygiene items. And they are now actually filling their carts with an average of $1,400 worth of supplies that they leave the store with. And then they bring those back to their students. And that includes over 800 teachers each semester. And that is serving over 30,000 students in our community each year.
You know, I'm thinking about the teachers that you just mentioned, the ones who do spend out of their own pocket, who see the needs, et cetera. And I have to imagine that some of the work you do leads to, you know, the kinds of thank yous from teachers where they're maybe not going to have to do that. Is that right, Betsy?
Absolutely, yes. And we realize these past few years have been incredibly challenging for teachers. So now more than ever, we want to ease this burden. And what we do is when a teacher thanks us and asks how they can give back, we actually ask them to send us a thank you card from their students, which we always love to see. So often they'll send a thank you, but they'll also send us sometimes pictures that their students have drawn, or they will send a picture of a project that they did with their students. And I have to say, that's one of my favorite things to see. One of the things I have loved that a teacher recently said is they said, "It puts a smile on my face when a kid who refuses to try will attempt a test when they feel that they have the tools." Because I think that's exactly what this program is about.
Wonderful. Okay, one more time before I let you go. Where do people find you and contribute here, Betsy?
Yes, absolutely. So if you go to our website at Jewish Family Services and you look at our Pencils and Paper program, there is a way there that you can find our most needed supplies. You could then call to drop those off. But also, if you donate to us, because we order at bulk through our partners, instead of going to a store and say buying one box of crayons, if you give to us that same amount of money, we could buy three boxes of crayons. So the money can go three times as far. So we most welcome donations that we can use to purchase these supplies. And the last thing I'll say is that we're always looking for volunteers. In the past year, volunteers provided over 2,000 hours of volunteer service at our store, bundling things, working at our teacher shopping, and we always welcome people to come on board in that way.
Betsy Bringawat is interim CEO of Jewish Family Services. They're running the Pencils and Paper program, and there's a lot more at the website. It's jfsrochester.org, and then you'll find the Pencils and Paper program. Good luck to you. You're helping so many people, Betsy. Thanks for telling the story here.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
And that is just one of the examples of some of the work being done to help kids and kids get ready. And another example comes through Sarah Chilson, Executive Director of The Spot, who is with us. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Tell us what The Spot is.
Sure. We're a locally founded nonprofit, and our mission is to provide free access to school supplies, clothing, sneakers, food support, and personal care items to students in need of assistance.
How long have you been doing this?
We're headed into our sixth year, actually. So we're just prepping for our back-to-school event, and this will be our sixth annual.
And there's need everywhere. And what you're doing helps kids in Canandaigua and Victor, K-12. Give us a sense for how and why this came together and maybe the need that you came to see here.
Sure. Well, it really started, I was in the community, we were new in town, and I thought I would just like to get involved in some sort of meaningful way, and I approached the school district and said, what do you need help with? And initially, it was truly just something as simple as a sock and underwear drive for the nurse's office. So we ran a very successful drive. It was mostly on social media. We had folks sending some things in. And when I went to deliver everything, they were really excited about all of the goodies. And they said, you know, we really could use some help with back to school supplies. We have a lot of families that need assistance and we aren't able to provide that. Would you be interested in doing that? So that's really how the spot was born. The very first year, we helped about 120 students. We had no donors, so my husband and I put about $3,000 worth of supplies on a credit card, just kind of hoping it would take off, and it did. So it was very exciting.
It's thespotny.org to learn more and let people know what you need most before I let you go here, Sarah.
Sure, absolutely. So we need volunteers. Always we need volunteers. We're a 100% volunteer-run organization, which means we have no paid staff. So if you have an hour a year or an hour a week, we can always use extra hands. The other thing we need right now as we prepare for back to school are folks who are able to financially sponsor a student. Something like $25 can help us get them a backpack, school supplies, sneakers. And then we also have Amazon wish lists linked on our website as well. Folks can send clothing, school supplies, personal care items right to our program, and those go directly to local students.
How many kids do you think you're going to help this year?
Oh, well, just at our back-to-school event, we're going to do about 500, and then we go through about 3,000 units of snacks a month, several hundred pairs of sneakers. So it's a lot of kids. Yep.
Sarah Chilson, the big-hearted executive director of The Spot, although as you just heard from Sarah, can't do it all. I mean, she and her husband could try, but I know you need help from the community. It's thespotny.org. I hope people find you. Good luck this school year. Thanks for sharing the story right here on Connections.
Thank you so much.
That is Sarah Chilson. And we've been spending the hour on these conversations, these quick-moving conversations on things happening in our community that you can contribute to, you can become a part of if you want, or simply that you should just know about. People, sometimes volunteers, grassroots efforts, organizations, doing the kind of work that is undercovered. And we're going to close the hour with a conversation with a couple of people, including one of my colleagues back in studio with us. Mikhail Gerstein is one of our colleagues right here at WXXI, and we've talked a lot about Mikhail's Ukrainian roots and frankly, what Mikhail and his family and friends have been through. He's got the Ukraine shirt on right now. I see it. Proud. Nice to see you back here, sir.
Thank you for having me again.
And also with us is Mary Monroe, the CEO of Mary Monroe Productions, which is co-producing Play for Ukraine, a United with Music benefit concert. Hi, Mary. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, hi, Evan. Wonderful to be with you again. Thank you so much for having us on the show.
So Mary and Mikhail, tell us what's coming up here and how this came together. Do you want to start, Mikhail?
Well, we spoke before many times about what we do and trying to do, the fundraisings for Ukraine and different things. My friends, musicians from Odessa, Ukraine, came up with this great idea, Play for Ukraine, sort of like throwing a benefit concerts with musicians from different styles, probably and hopefully like all over Ukraine and all over the world. And I've been asking musicians here in Rochester, and Mary, who is a good old friend, older young lady, a talented musician and talented dancer, and she contacted me back, and this is how it all started with the benefit concert that we were doing together on August 27th.
So Mary helped organize the lineup. It's August 27th, starting at 8 p.m., at 75 Stutson Street. What's the venue, Mary?
Okay, yeah. So it's a beautiful venue. It used to be an old church, and they added on a bigger performance stage with professional lighting and sound, and it's just a wonderful place to play. But I had been looking for a way to give back, and I did the other United with Music concert to help the refugees in 2017. So I prayed, you know, to know who to work with, and then Mikhail came my way. Because, you know, there's some places you donate to and you don't know where the money's going. Well, he gets the money directly to the sources. So I was so happy when he contacted me. And John Dady, the 2022 inductee from the Rochester Music Hall of Fame that performed with his brother Joe that has passed on, is headlining. We're having Delana Alexandria perform, who is the most renowned belly dancer in the region. And the World Music Quartet with Nate Coffey, myself, Tommy Gravine, we're going to be representing music from across the world. And it's just a wonderful opportunity for people to come together and raise the vibrations of not just the community, but the world, and show support for Ukraine. So there's many reasons to buy those tickets. They're $25 in advance, $30 at the door, and you can get them at eventbrite.com now. So I really hope you'll be a part of this wonderful, beautiful event.
We will link to all of the information about this event, Play for Ukraine, which is on August 27th in Rochester. We're going to link to it on our website when we post the audio of this show later today, so you can share it if you want to learn more. Mikhail, I noticed I don't see you on the musical lineup there, sir.
I seen only when I'm driving. Actually, we drove with my wife a couple of days ago, I think Saturday night, and we were singing that Chervona Kalina in the car, and my stepdaughter was with us, who came back from Ukraine, and she recorded it quietly from behind.
Us singing
this. It was pretty short, but when I saw it, I couldn't hold to post it. It's just me and my wife singing the song together, alone with the radio. And that's Chervona Kalina, one of them, actually, that started the drum factory in Odessa, Ukraine. They came up with some volunteering idea to go around the city, go on a beach in Odessa, help and kind of like lift up the spirits of the people. One of the songs they played on drums was It's My Life, Bon Jovi's. And
yeah,
apparently Bon Jovi noticed them. And there's even post on Bon Jovi's, I think, Twitter account with them playing on the beach. And I work with the guys, and I hope on the 27th I will be able to transcribe and actually voice over their address, what they do, and like in interviews, because they all of a sudden became famous in Ukraine.
And you said your stepdaughter is home from Ukraine now.
She just landed
back, I should say, here from Ukraine, yeah.
Last Friday, yes.
How is she doing?
Oh, good.
It's hard to say. I mean, what people going through there. We're trying to keep it as quiet as possible, not, you know, interact and interfere with her feelings being back, knowing that, you know, the family is still there.
Yeah.
But I think I mentioned in one of the first shows that they lived through the bombings of Kyiv almost a month, and I couldn't imagine, and I still can't imagine her or even my friends living for the bombings right now in different cities like Nikolaev or Odessa even. And every time I speak with them and they leave through, it's kind of a relief for all of us here. But, you know, you're trying to help with everything you can. And
every little bit counts.
And, yeah. And, I mean, Mary, we've done an amazing job with organizing everything. It's our forever.
Well, thanks,
thankful.
Mikhail.
Mary,
well, I'm glad you came to me too.
Yeah, Mary. You know, I'm curious to know if you feel like these kind of events are not only important to raise money and do sort of a small but important part, but to also keep the hearts and minds of people on this subject. I mean, the last time Mikhail and I talked on this program, we talked about how, I mean, Ukrainian Americans are not forgetting about what's happening there, but for many other Americans, they're not seeing the same amount of coverage.
Yes.
And yeah, I wonder if this is important for that reason too, Mary.
Oh, definitely. We need to keep the awareness alive as far as, you know, this war is still going on. And it's funny, like the news just doesn't cover it anymore. I have to like do research to find out what's going on there. You know, I have to dig deep. So it's still happening. People are still in great need of support. And Mikhail's just awesome. I mean, he's been giving his own funds, collecting money, just showing so much support. He does everything in all his waking hours. And I'm sure he doesn't sleep a lot to help his community, his country. And I'm just so glad that I can play a small part in this. But it's a wonderful feeling to be able to give back and help. And this is just an opportunity for people who are looking for a way to support Ukraine to come out, but also to really bring positive vibrations in the world to combat all the negative ones that are happening. So, and just to show support, just Ukraine knowing all these people care is important, and definitely the awareness.
The event coming up is called Play for Ukraine, a United with Music benefit concert. It's August 27th. If you want to set your calendars. August 27th coming up, starting at 8 p.m., and that's happening at the space at 75 Stutson Street in Rochester. You can get tickets now, $25 pre-sale, $30 at the door. I suspect, Mikhail, people will be overpaying for tickets because they probably want to, they understand this is about raising some money and supporting a cause here.
Well, it's greatly appreciated because it's for the great cause. And I'm working with the local community, Ukrainian community, to bring some souvenirs and gifts. And possibly we may have a painter, a professional painter, who just came with her family from Kharkiv a while back. And she is fantastic, just fantastic. And I hope to bring some of her paintings over there as well for sale, or maybe like a silent auction or something like that.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm working with her right now. I mean, she's doing some stuff, and hopefully this Friday we will announce it on Facebook together with her.
And so, Mikhail, we're ending with this song, Mutahad. So we're going to hear some sounds that I hope are a little bit of a taste of what's coming on August 27th, but so many great musicians who will be there that night. Mary Monroe, the CEO of Mary Monroe Productions. Thanks for putting it together and telling us the story today, Mary.
Thank you, Evan. We really appreciate it.
And Mikhail, love you, my brother. Thanks for being here, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for all the support.
From the whole team at Connections, thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.